Faith here with your welcome toast. Christopher Moore said, when surfers put on their wetsuits to guard against the chill of icy waters, great white sharks adjust their diets to include shrink-wrapped people snacks on fiberglass crackers.
Well, I'm a hungry woman. Feed me like I want to be fed. Yeah, I'm a hungry woman. Feed me like I want to be fed. Well, you can feed my body, but you really gotta feed my head.
It's great to have you joining the party on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze, inviting you to eat, drink, and be merry with us. The gang is here. We're all excited about this particular conversation because when I first saw Nigella Lawson on TV, I did this thing that I think a lot of other people have done, and I said, who is this? It had little to do with Nigella being beautiful, which she is. It was the whole package. She has this sensuous approach to food and its pleasure, her encouragement of home cooks. She insists she is one, that she's not a chef, and her kind of pitch-perfect combination of flavors and ingredients that communicate what I think is joy. So, in this new cookbook of hers, At My Table, she is writing about stuff she loves to make, eat, and share with guests. She's 9 best-selling cookbooks in, and with every one, I'm knocked out by what she chooses to make overall, but there's always something in a book of hers that makes her one of my domestic goddesses. In this book, it would be the emergency brownies for 2 people. Nigella Lawson, welcome to the Food Schmooze Party.
Oh, what a fantastic introduction. I don't know where we can go from there.
Let me see what I can do. I've been watching you doing your interviews all over because if you do something in print, I just go to it immediately because I'm so interested in what you do. And I just finished interviews with Lydia Bastianich and Giada De Laurentiis.
Yes.
So I've been doing this a long time, and I know that a book tour is never easy. And so I'm listening to you, and I'm thinking, when you are interviewed by American media, how are we different in our interests with you than what British broadcasters would be interested in? Is there a difference?
I don't know if there is a huge difference. I mean, I think possibly what makes a bit of a difference in the UK, but mainly in with older people, is that who remember, you know, I had a career and a journalistic life before I started writing about food or going on TV talking about food. So that can make a difference. I think sometimes the biggest difference in how I'm interviewed is whether it's a man or a woman, actually, rather than where they come from.
Oh, of course, now I have to ask you. I was going to go right to the recipe, but now I have to ask you, what is that difference?
Mostly that men seem generally sure that I'm always saying things which have some sort of other meaning, some sexual meaning. And I always say to them, look, so they quote something. It could be, but what I'm saying is I'm filling some glasses with chocolate mousse. And I just have to say, now please explain to me what you think the double entendre is. What is it that you think I am saying? And they never can. So I always find that I find that tiresome. However, I am aware that people often think that I'm doing that, my friends laugh at that because they know that I'm really so not that kind of a person. So that happens a bit. But generally speaking, I think if you talk to the right people, and I try and talk to the right people, you always have an interesting conversation.
Is there something that you wish interviewers would ask you but rarely do?
No, I don't think so. I think people often do. I mean, I think that what is very important to me, and you were talking about ingredients and flavors, for me, words are an essential ingredient. And one of the things that lured me over to food writing, and from there, I suppose, it took me a bit of convincing, but I did then make some, you know, food programs. But what was the challenge and, in a way, the appeal was finding the right language to describe food and to describe how any ingredients felt at any time within the cooking process. And that, to me, is a very important part of what I do. And I think it's a world constructed out of language.
It really, really is. Because you do have a literary sense. You have a sense of touch. There's something cinematic about what you do. So I'm glad you said all that. I want to go to a recipe of yours that was so appealing to me in this new book, At My Table. It's this egg tortilla pie.
Yes, it's scarcely a recipe. You know how the best things at home. It was really just, you know, a quick supper whereby you get, I mean, I use the soft flour tortillas. I mean, I buy them. I'm not making them. And, you know, it really was a question of a friend of mine said, oh, you know, when she gets home, sometimes she just makes this kind of quick pie by putting a tortilla in her dish and then adding whatever she's got around to it. And generally, I do ham, grated cheese, and a couple of eggs, and then using another tortilla, if you think of it like a pie, like the top lid of the pie, and just putting a bit of olive oil and putting it in the oven, a bit of the hot sauce. And it's just one of those things that can really help at the end of the day.
Yes. It's easy, and it's comfort food, and it's something you can cook on a weeknight and or brunch, people coming over. Just wonderful idea. I was so tempted to talk about black pudding because I'm from Scottish people.
And so you know and love it, or do you know?
Oh, I love it. But no one here knows what it is, so I'm not going to.
It's one of those things that some people do know about and some people love, but otherwise the people are horrified.
Yes, yes.
Blood pudding, it's called.
Yes, it's a blood sausage. So.
Yeah.
This is interesting, this Catalan toast. Our friend Alex Province is Spanish, senior contributor on the show, and his family in Spain, and now he in America, they make this all the time. This, you tell me about it.
You know, a lot of people go to the restaurants often and have the Italian version, the sort of bruschetta with tomatoes. But what it is the Spanish version or the Catalan version, I think is quite interesting, is that it's toast. And often when I've been there, they will smear a bit of garlic over it and then put some chopped tomato, but quite thinly. You can still see the toast underneath the tomato. And so what I do is I get a very ripe tomato and I chop it, and I carry on. I mean, I use a mezzaluna, which is one of those two-handled curved knives. That's only because I'm very clumsy, and if you've got both hands around a handle, you're not going to cut yourself. But basically, you just carry on chopping till you've got a sort of pinky red fuzz, and I add a bit of minced garlic to it and olive oil, and I leave it for a while. So it's almost like a tomato spread. It's amazing. You can get one generous-sized tomato, not one of those big beefsteaks ones which are too coarse-skinned. I mean, you can spread so many bits of toast with that, and it's wonderful. So if you don't do it too thickly, you know, and you sprinkle some finishing salt of your choice. Obviously, I'm British. I use Maldon. And it's a wonderful way to start any dinner, or, in fact, sometimes in summer, without the garlic, I have it in the garden for breakfast.
This is Nigella Lawson. I'm thrilled to have her on the show because I am a fan of hers. And her new cookbook is At My Table, and she's in her hotel, and we're talking.
I'm in Vancouver.
Oh, what a beautiful place that is.
Yes.
Oh, you're lucky. Okay, so I want to thank you because you've allowed us to put three recipes from the book on our website.
And what have you chosen?
Well, we've chosen the Turkish eggs to start with.
I love those.
You do?
I have to say to everyone that I agree it sounds an odd proposition to have poached eggs on yogurt, so you just have to try it because it sounds strange, but everyone who's tried it has been just bowled over. And it's simple to make. I had to get over a lifelong fear of egg poaching, which I have now, I'm very proud to say.
If people are afraid, you can always get those little cups, whatever you want to do.
Or you could soft boil and peel, or you could do sunny side up.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The next recipe you said would work for our listeners at foodschmooze.org, where we describe everything about your book, chili mint lamb cutlets.
Spicy lamb cutlets. Do you know, I'm flying back home this weekend, and that is the first thing I'm going to eat at home, those lamb cutlets and the mint and preserved lemon sauce, because they are utterly delicious. after such a long flight, I will be tired, but I want to cook something. And I thought that was the perfect thing to cook to welcome me home.
And this is this from your mother, correct? This was her sauce?
Well, the mint sauce is a very contemporary tweaking of what the mint sauce my mother always made. I have a thing about preserved lemons.
I do too.
My mother made a mint sauce with vinegar, fresh mint, a pinch of sugar and boiling water. And I thought, well, I have a couple of preserved lemons left bobbing about in the jar in the fridge. So let me try and see if I can make the mint sauce with the lemons. And I did, and now I always do. And in fact, I use this particular recipe that you're going to have on the website as a basis for all manner of, you know, herb salsas now. And it's very nice when that becomes part of a repertoire.
Yes, because you could do it with chicken, swordfish, a number of things.
Yeah, and Mondays, I often have a bit of a clear out of my fridge and see which herbs are looking a bit, you know, just like they're on their last legs. And I make a big batch of sauce with whatever herbs I've got. And it's great, and the preserved lemons give it the sort of depth and zing.
The last recipe that we chose that's on foodschmooze.org is the one that I said during the introduction just blew me away, which is these emergency brownies for two. And you probably knew that when you put this in the book, right?
No, it was quite a late addition to the book, and I just thought, no, they have to go in. I was at home one evening, and I just really needed, I just thought, I have to have a brownie, and I didn't want, I mean, what is the point of using so many eggs up, so much chocolate for everything when you haven't got a lot of people there to eat them all? And so I made this small batch recipe, and in fact, you know, it's very fudgy and cocoa-y, and it's been immensely popular at home. I mean, all it is, you know, just one egg, 3 tablespoons of cocoa, and 3 tablespoons of all-purpose flour, and some butter and brown sugar and a bit of maple syrup.
And it comes out as a generous portion.
As a generous portion, and it always looks a bit sad in the tin because, of course, it's quite low down. But when you take it out and cut it, then you feel, that's fine, this is how it should be.
I have to say that when I came to a particular page, because I'm an anchovy fan, I know not everyone is. Oh, I thought this is a genius combination. Sirloin steaks with an anchovy cream sauce.
Anchovy lovers always find a haven in my books. We all know about steak with a pepper sauce, steak au poivre. And I just thought, how wonderful, because the anchovy cream sauce is like a salt version of the pepper sauce. And it's so wonderful with it. And actually, it's pretty wonderful as well with lamb.
Mm-hmm. What a good idea. I want to come back to something. This is Nigella Lawson, and her new cookbook is At My Table. You've perhaps heard her being interviewed in some different places. We're very excited to have her on the Food Schmooze party. And I'm trying to get at why she loves what she loves, not just these recipes that are at foodschmooze.org. So at the beginning, you said that you felt there was a difference between men and women interviewing you, and that there was this little kind of labeling of your seductiveness and all that stuff. And, you know, I was thinking about you, and I was looking at your picture on the book, and I thought, I bet, would you consider yourself a bit of an introvert?
I don't know whether I'm an introvert or not, but, you know, I was a very shy child. My mother used to try and stop me being shy at 15. When I was 15, she said to me things like, Nigella, for God's sake, stop being, who do you think is interested in you anyway? She thought shyness was an act of self-indulgence, and I can see her point now, but, you know, when you're 15, it doesn't help. But anyway, I didn't really start talking and feeling less shy until I went to live in Italy. That changed the way I cooked, and it changed the way I felt as a person. But I can be, I love talking, and I love being connected with people. So in that sense, I don't know that I'm an introvert. I was as a child, for sure.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I love sharing what I enjoy, my enthusiasms and food, and if I'm reading a book I like, I love all that. And as I say, I like being connected with people.
Yeah. Do you have to go home and recharge?
Yes.
I get that.
I do. I potter about my kitchen, and I lie about reading, and that's then I feel, you know, rested.
Do you like to read novels?
I like novels, and I like memoir.
Did you read the Elena Ferrante?
I did. I felt I made a mistake in reading it in translated form, that I should have read it in Italian. I felt I didn't know whether I was really reading what her words were like, and I felt it was lazy of me, since I can understand Italian. I would have found it hard, but would have improved my Italian had I read it in Italian. It was compelling.
Yep.
I was pulled back into that world, but I also didn't want to be in the world.
Yes, me too. Exactly. I have to say, I hope you're happy. You're just wonderful at what you do. I so appreciate it.
That's a lovely thing to say. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck.
I love this.
Thank you.
As I say, sharing my enthusiasm gives me a very deep pleasure.
I know that about you. Thank you so much.
Okay, then.
Bye-bye.
Another time.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Nigella Lawson, her new cookbook, isn't she great, is called At My Table, A Celebration of Home Cooking. And I hope we got at who she is as well as the kind of food that she cooks, which is about her too, of course. But it's nice to really get to know the person. Oh, we have great stuff coming your way. Stay with us.
Well, you can feed me chocolate buns, feed me goose pate, feed me nuts and honey and your seafood buffet. Feed me fresh ambrosia with a whipped cream spread. Make me smack my lips, but don't forget my head. I'm a hungry woman, but feed me like I want to be fed. Yeah, I'm a hungry woman, but feed me like I like to be fed. Yeah, you can feed my body, but you really gotta feed my head.
Cornbread had a fight. Beans knocked cornbread out of sight.
Beans.
Cornbread said, "Now that's all right.
Beans.
Meet me on the corner tomorrow night.
I'll be ready.
I'm Faith Middleton with my food buddies, and you can sign up for our free podcast, which means a copy of the show. You sign up for it once at our site, and then we send it to you, and you listen on your schedule. A lot of people know that's how podcasts work, but if you don't, I'm interested in you if you don't. I end up listening to the podcast myself, believe it or not. I am with my treasured food buddies, Chris Prosperi, chef and co-owner of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, wine broker Alex Province, who is in both Connecticut and right now in his other home, Phoenix, Arizona, and so he's now our Southwestern correspondent part-time. And we have Mark Raymond, who is also a wine broker from Wethersfield, Connecticut. Robin Doyen Aiken is our senior producer. Hey, everybody.
Hey.
Okay, here we go. Let's do a quick kind of round-robin thing on kitchen tips. I cruise all over the internet, publications, online, on TV, radio. I'm listening to food stuff, reading food stuff constantly, cookbooks. And when I find things that are really terrific, I want to talk about them. And so this time we've got Cooks Illustrated. I thought these were pretty darn good. Okay, Chris Prosperi, go.
All right, this is a really cool one. If you're like me and probably everybody, you know the rubber gloves you do dishes with, right?
Yeah.
If you're doing dishes and they rip or get a hole in them.
I do that.
Right? Yep. Everyone does. And then you throw them away. Well, this woman rode in, and what she does is take a pair of scissors and cuts it so it's a full circle, and then you get these perfect rubber bands.
Like cuts your fingers.
What a clever idea.
So she makes it in different sizes, and right as you go down to the wrist part, you got big rubber bands, and on top
you
got
little ones.
It's
like the lobster bands.
Yeah, like little.
Exactly. Only wider. You know how I always try and think of something to do with the lobster bands?
Yeah, and you can cut them to the width you want, too. So it's a great use of, something you were going to chuck in the garbage.
It's good recycling. I like that. Okay. Mark Raymond, what do you have?
Oh, I've got this really cool tip from a woman in Charleston, South Carolina.
This is Cooks Illustrated.
This is Cooks Illustrated, yep. Rachel Delaney, she writes in about chipotle peppers. You know, you get the whole can, right?
The one in the adobo sauce, right?
Yeah, with the sauce, right?
Yeah.
And so I guess what they are is actually dried smoked jalapenos, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're always hotter than I think they're going to be. Oh, yeah.
They really are. They're super spicy. But
right?
I absolutely love them, and there's so many uses for them. But what she does is she takes an ice cube tray, and she individually puts one pepper in each tray and then pours a little bit of the sauce and freezes them. And now when she needs one pepper per time, you can take it out of the tray and then kind of slice it up while it's still frozen. And that way you don't have the sauce falling all over the place. And
more control.
A little bit more control of the portion size.
That is a great one. So, Alex, you're in Arizona right now. And I buy these peppers here in our supermarkets. And they're still in the cabinet because I haven't a clue what to do with them. As you have just gotten to Arizona for the first time, are you seeing these peppers? They must know how to use them constantly, right?
So first and foremost, all the grocery stores have a much more elaborate selection of Mexican-inspired food. So there's so many different kinds of chilies and cheeses and sour creams and sauces. And so, yeah, for us, it's like a new learning experience figuring out what to do with this stuff. But next time I'm in Connecticut, give me those cans. I'll bring them back.
Okay.
I'll put them in my luggage.
One of the things I do with the peppers, first of all, I love to use it in my chili, or if I'm making barbecue pulled pork, I'll put a little bit in there. But I'll take a half a teaspoon and I'll put it into like a tablespoon or two tablespoons of mayonnaise make a chipotle mayonnaise.
Yeah.
And then I'll put that on like a chicken wrap or some
sort of. And a little goes a long way.
And you can keep it in the fridge and it'll last forever.
But what do I do? There's another pepper that has less heat than chipotle, and I'm just trying to think what it is because I bought a bag of those, and they're still in cellophane because I don't know what to do with them. Alex, you've got to be our correspondent about what to do with these peppers because we can get them here.
Yeah, if you take them and you just put them in hot water, they'll soften right up. And then use your immersion blender, throw in a tomato, a little sautéed onion, and you have like an instant like enchilada sauce. And
but then what about the heat factor? I can't anymore take
I scrape out the seeds. So make sure you get the seeds out because I think a lot of the heat's in there. And then start off, use more tomato and less chili until you figure it out. I have that same fear. Wash your hands. Don't ever touch these things and touch your face.
Yeah,
danger.
Or anything else.
Yeah.
Or were those rubber gloves Chris was talking about?
No, they've been cut up. They're fingerless.
All right, wait a minute. Let me just pull myself together.
I don't want to talk about that story.
Okay, so this was a fantastic lightning round. All right, I have one more thing to add. A few shows ago, we did some stuff on the food trucks. I am a nut about food trucks. And there is one during that show that I mentioned, and it is called Plouf Plouf. It's P-L-O-U-F. Plouf Plouf means splash splash in French. And this is a food truck in Providence, Rhode Island. Yes, plouf plouf.
Plouf, plouf.
In Providence, Rhode Island. There is a 3-star chef who is running this. His name is Mario Moliere. And the thing they sell the most of, and I'm going to tell you where this is in Providence. It's at Kennedy Plaza, College Hill, where Brown University is, and RISD. Or you could just go online, plouf, plouf, and see where they are.
I just want to keep saying it.
they post where they're. But well, let me just tell you what they make.
Yeah,
tell
please.
Me if you don't. This is for those of us who go to the, my family's on the Cape, who go to the Cape and want to have a stop on the way that would be fun and not a fortune. And this is it. This truck serves, its most popular thing is a duck burger with Parmesan truffle fries. Duck burger,
duck
Parmesan
burger?
Truffle fries
all
together. They make many other things, but that is the big hit at this truck.
Ground duck, you think, or like a confit, like pulled apart?
If I'm making it, I'm chopping up the meat and maybe mixing it with a little something else, and that's how I'm making my burger. Chris, what would you do to make a duck burger?
I'm just looking up Ploof Ploof on the phone, and like there's 800 hits on the Ploof Ploof food truck, so I want to go there right away.
I know. I'm passing through Providence next week.
This guy specializes in from-scratch cuisine, so he's got stews and summer salads, like all in the French tradition.
You can get everything on a food truck now.
Oh, yeah.
It's the coolest way to eat. And there's parks now,
if
right?
It's where good,
you can,
yeah.
And there's parks where like you can go and there's 15 different types. They're all lined up. There's a grilled cheese. There's a cupcake. There's a steak. There's a burger one.
You know what it is?
Food.
It's Queens on wheels.
Yeah.
Because you can eat around the world with some of these food trucks now. So I don't know what their tax situation is, but they're lucky because they don't have the rent. They have to find a place to cook that is legal, but they don't have the monthly rent. Yeah. I'm sure there are some, there's
so
some
many
kind of
other
tax
things.
Things you
I'm
work
sure
out.
There's some fees that they have to get.
And plus you need permission in various towns. But trucks are showing up in towns where I never thought they would allow a truck. I'm thinking about Madison, Connecticut.
Yeah. Two of them there.
Yes, Alex. Okay, so we've got
I have a time capsule still buried at Academy Elementary right next to those food trucks. That's where I went to school. So
see,
I
you can dig it up and have lunch.
Have a burrito.
What is in that time capsule? Do you remember?
I don't know. Something about the space shuttle, and that was like new stuff back then. So,
Showing your age.
Dig it up.
Wow. One of those.
Yeah,
sort
a Sony Walkman.
I was going to say one of the Seinfeld phones where there's a big antenna up.
Velcro sneakers.
Okay. I have. We're about to come into the season of peaches. And so I love locally grown peaches. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, or,
she's
you know,
dripping.
If you could get me some peaches from Oregon or wherever, I'm good with that too. As long as they're just the peachiest peaches, I am in heaven. Alex has got a cocktail for us, and Chris has got one that his new favorite summer cocktail. We'll get to this. But this recipe I wanted to share with you, which is something that I like to make. It's bourbon-glazed peaches on the grill.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa.
Okay,
Sign me up. Easy.
You just butter and brown sugar and lemon, some bourbon, and a little bit of water, and then, of course, ripe peaches that you cut in half. And when you make this little sauce on the stovetop, let the peaches sit in the sauce for a while so they kind of absorb it.
Nice.
And then you make sure with a little pastry brush or whatever you've got that it's all over. And then you put them on the grill. And it caramelizes because of the sugar and, and the sugar in the bourbon.
Mm.
You can then put ice cream with that, or you could put those peaches onto something,
like
a piece of cake or whatever you want.
The cake and ice cream.
A little sprinkle of cayenne pepper, make it some South.
See, now you're really set low.
Spicy.
Oh,
yes, sir.
Oh, boy.
Spicy bourbon.
Yep.
That's what I'm doing.
Giddy up, buddy. Okay, so here we go. Alex, why don't you give us, then we're going to go to our two wines and tell you about a trick that we have, the fun that we've been having mixing wines together in the studio. We've got a rosé and a Malbec, which is great. That Malbec, great with ice in it, or in the refrigerator, solid cold to have it with steak or lamb or whatever you've got going on the grill. It almost feels like a little bit of a dry sangria when you put these ice cubes in it.
I love that.
Okay, so Alex, give it to us. What do you have for your cocktail?
Sure. How about a Spanish gin tonic? So everyone knows the English gin tonic, you know, gin and just tonic. What makes this Spanish is they use a big balloon glass, like that big wide wine glass, you know, that's almost ridiculously big. And you're going to use aromatics like citrus rinds, rosemary sprigs, thyme, mint leaves, lavender, cucumber slices. This comes together by taking this wine glass, fill it with ice, and Spain, they like it very, very cold, and then let your guests or you choose whatever aromatic you want to use. So a sprig of rosemary for me and a mint leaf, maybe some peppercorns if you want. Use
all
gin.
Together?
All together, and then use your favorite gin. You can figure out how much gin you want. The key to this is a really quality tonic. So we like Fever Tree or Q-Tonic, something in a bottle, not the cloyingly sweet stuff. So what makes this special is instead of using a highball, you have this big, wide, overflowing
fun glass
with all these fun things sticking out. It serves super cold. And you can go to your garden and just clip stuff.
And you know, how much do you put in? I mean, we have the recipe at foodschmooze.org,
sure.
Alex's recipe.
The herbs are going to make it aromatic, but it's also decorative. So part of this is just it looks fun. Grab a 2 or 3 sprigs of rosemary and just stick it so it's popping out of the glass, kind of like a Bloody Mary on brunch, you know, but with a gin tonic.
Another point to that, too, is the aromatics. As you're putting that glass up to your nose, you're getting that rosemary scent. And all the botanicals that you get from a gin and tonic just kind of start to explode.
The idea is gin is not really anything. You can make it whatever you want. You know, legally, it's grain alcohol and then aromatics. The thought is you're just kind of making your own gin. You add aromatics that you like, and you kind of can play off, you know, if you're using a fancy gin.
I mean, that's
the thought behind this. You can have a gin tonic party at your house. So just have the bar set up, have all the herbs and stuff, and then let everyone customize their own.
Yeah, and there's so many cool herbs. Like I have pineapple mint that grows in my garden now.
Cool.
We've got lemon balm.
Lemon thyme.
So many beers.
Chocolate mint or something.
Chocolate mint. Yeah, I mean, there's so many different things.
Alex, can you do this with vodka?
Yeah, you know, why not?
Some people can't have
gin. Then you're
gin.
Really making your own gin.
Yeah.
If you do it with vodka, you're making
your own gin, right?
Really
Chris is right.
Add some crushed junipers in there.
You're making herbal vodka, right?
Right.
Okay.
You know, the thing is, gins have changed today. So I think people grew up with old-fashioned gins, but now the big thing is they're making all this craft gin. So anyone who doesn't like gin might want to revisit it. I think they've changed a little bit. There's some neat ones
out
there.
Yeah, and if you can't find one of these small craft gins, a gorgeous gin is Plymouth.
It's
in a nice little bottle. Okay.
And don't feel obligated to
use whatever. Use whatever you have.
People who don't like tonic, just have gin by itself with a little squeeze of lime in there.
The original martini.
You know, make yourself a nice little gimlet.
You know how quinine is really bitter and gin is bitter? The idea why these two ingredients work well is supposedly these molecules stick to each other and make them less bitter as a combination. So if you don't like quinine on its own together with gin, you might like it.
Sweet.
Or you'll forget that you don't like it.
No, that's right. So coming up in our next segment, we have a wine discovery for you. Very affordable, $12 a bottle. We have a rosé and a Malbec that we think are good with so many foods. And we also wanted to play a game with what happens if we mix things together. Wineries do this. Why can't we do it right here in the studio? We're going to give it a shot. You know us. We love the local. Please support your local food growers and food makers. And to get the podcast free of the Food Schmooze Party every week, to find all of our curated recommendations, go to foodschmooze.org. And don't go away.
Your lips taste like sangria. Your lips taste like sangria. Your lips taste like sangria. Spanish wine, bet you let this head of mine keep spinning around.
Strawberries, cherries, and an angel's kissing spray. My summer.
Is the Food Schmooze Party offering the richness of life and coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York. New York, including Westchester County, East End of Long Island, the Hamptons, of course. Senior producer is Robin Doyen Aiken, and to hear the show on Connecticut Public Radio, it airs Thursdays at 3 and 9 and Saturdays at noon. and with my food buddies, Alex Province and Chris Rosperi and Mark Raymond. Robin, I mentioned, so okay. Before we go to the wine tasting, value wines, people, $12 a bottle, two different categories. Chris, your favorite cocktail for the summer?
All right, real quick. And I was just in Europe. I'm walking by these outdoor cafes, and everyone had this, like, orangey, pinkish-looking drink mm-hmm. on the table. You know, and after, like, walking, I don't know, 10 blocks and seeing everyone on the porch having the same drink, I had to ask my cousin, what is that? She's like, it's an Aperol Spritz. Have you heard of it?
Yeah.
I mean, I've had Aperol, but I've never had the Spritz. So we went, she's like, okay, let's sit down at the next one and have one. I love it.
Here's why. Because we have done the Aperol Spritz on this show, I don't know how many times. Who is the one who says, no, thank you, Mr. Prosperi?
Yeah.
And now
yeah.
he goes yeah. to Europe yeah. and it looks great in a glass.
Looks great in a glass. And everyone's
it's a
having
European
it.
Glass.
And everyone's having it.
As I recall, Faith, you spilled some on your white pants before.
I believe I did. Yes, yes.
And
I
now
did.
I'm in love with this drink.
Because, it's wonderful.
And yeah. it's low alcohol. Yeah.
You so refreshing.
Yeah, and I add more soda than a regular recipe calls for.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
you must be in the Absolutely. Sun and drink as much as you want.
And
much
it has
as
a kind of bitter
yes.
note to it that's
oh, all
really
kinds
wonderful.
Of things going on.
You know, before you're yep. eating dinner, this is a great thing to have because you don't want to have, sometimes I don't, too much alcohol
yeah.
As an aperitif. And, you know, I want something, I was going to say neutral, but somehow the bitter works anyway.
It doesn't
so Aperol
spoil your
Spritz.
Appetite.
So I should have listened when we had
hey,
it on the
Chris,
show.
Chris, was it in the big wine glass?
Yeah, it was in the huge
goblet.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
why you can't miss it when you're walking down the
yep.
street.
Okay, so my favorite drink of the summer is watermelon with either vodka or tequila. What I do is I will, when the watermelon starts coming in, I open it up when I get home. Chop it up into chunks. I get seedless for obvious mm-hmm. reasons. And then all the chunks I put in a plastic bag, into the freezer it goes.
Oh.
And then when I'm making my watermelon thing, I just throw it in the blender and
no
it gives
ice
it
needed.
A little bit of a freeze to it. It stays really
Genius.
Cold and
yeah.
you put in whatever alcohol you like.
And no ice
And
needed.
So herbs or whatever you want to do. I just am crazy about watermelon. So it's really wonderful for me.
Just yeah. make sure you're grabbing the watermelon, not the chipotle pepper for us earlier.
That's right.
Okay. This is very spicy.
Okay. So let's try a couple of wines. Mark, thank you for bringing this in to try.
Oh, my pleasure.
And we all said, oh, yes, at this price point. Because, let me put it to you this way, can you guarantee that these are wholesomely made, meaning no junk in the wine at the vineyard,
Absolutely.
To stretch them, to,
yeah.
you know, make the so-called recipe at $12?
These are simple estate-made wines. There's no fillers. There's no additives. These are really wholesome wines.
Okay. So they're not straining them through pig's bladder or anything?
No,
okay.
no.
Okay,
oh,
here we go. So we're going to start with the rosé. This is the new vintage of a wine we featured on the show before, but this is the new vintage. No vintage tastes like the last one. Well, Mark, would you take the cork
yeah,
out
Yeah, let me
of
grab that.
That
here.
As you're doing that, would you... Yeah.
How about that?
Oh, that was fun. So this is Baron Delay. Don't worry about writing this down because it's on our site, foodschmooze.org. This is a Rioja... Go
from the
it.
Region of Rioja, Spain. And this is their Rosado.
Where
or
is
Rosé,
this vineyard?
Just south of Logroño, which is the capital of Rioja, in a town called Mendavia. It's one of the few wineries in Rioja that actually only produces from what they grow.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Isn't that unbelievable?
And unlike a lot of rosé that comes from Rioja, this is 100% Garnacha. A lot of times you'll see they blend in Tempranillo or they make a whole Tempranillo rosé.
But there's nothing wrong with that, right? The
no.
blending, because you're looking for a flavor profile.
Exactly.
And people who like Garnacha, it's the same grape as Grenache in France, so don't be intimidated. Uh-huh. It's just spelled in the Spanish way.
Right.
And what does that mean? For someone who's hearing this Grenache or Grenacha in Spain, what does that mean? What can you expect from that grape?
It's like fruity and soft tannins and just enjoyable.
It's
like
a real easy drinking
wine.
Dry.
Yeah. It's a dry wine,
yeah.
yep.
Okay. So this is a rosé, which has become more and more popular, just as Europe has done with these wines. They just love them. $12 a bottle. If you go online, we've got a picture of the label, and we tell you what to say. Call ahead to your wine store. They can't stock everything. They should have it to you within 24 hours, you know, unless you call at 10 o'clock at night. Baron de Lay is L-E-Y, Baron de Lay. So I'm looking at this and taking a sip. Here's something I want to tell you. I have had some very fancy rosés lately. They have been, when I first drink them, amazing. And then, as happens, you get, if you drink wine in a sensual way and it goes down your throat and through your body, a good wine will have this echo in the mouth, at the back of your throat, and where it's going, wow, 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 again. And it is a beautiful thing when that happens. The question is, what's going on during that echo? Lately, the fancy ones have had this candy effect where there's kind of almost sweetness in the echo, and I think, uh-oh,
yeah,
that's not good.
No.
And Mark, where does that come from?
It could be from
too much alcohol.
Too much alcohol. It can be from overripe grapes, but in that sweetness you're talking about, and I've had that, it's almost like a Jolly Rancher effect in the back of your throat, where you, you know, you've had, we've all had Jolly Rancher candies, and they have that sort of...
Some of the younger people.
Yeah. They've been around a little while.
No, I'm just kidding.
The candy, I'm always afraid I'm going to pull my molar out when
you lay down on them.
Yeah, like the
you
sugar
know, but
daddy.
As a whole, though, rosés are still such a wonderful value. For under $15, you can get most of them on the market. If you get the current vintage, are so good. I'm afraid the price is going to go up one day, but at the moment, like, where else can you get a $12 bottle of wine?
So, Alex, I was just at a tasting. These rosés were so expensive, through the roof. And so there are companies that say, all right, if that's the new thing with people, we're going to make the most so-called elegant version of this that we can and charge a lot of money. So I like what Alex is saying. You don't have to spend. So I really like this. Okay, now here's the other one. This is a dark red called Finca El Origen. Alex, finca is really the word for, is it farm?
Like a farmhouse out in the countryside.
Yeah.
Where people have their house in the village, and then outside in the farmland you have a finca that you spend the weekends on.
So, Mark, this is a reserve. It's a Malbec.
Malbec is an amazing grape that in Argentina is the red grape of Argentina. Originally from France.
And this is from Argentina.
And this wine, Finca El Origen, is from
$12 again.
Argentina. $12 a bottle.
At the website.
Beautiful, elegant, velvety plum and red berries, dark cherry. It's absolutely sensual and delicious. I love this.
We don't think in the summer of something so dark necessarily. What I do with my red wines, unless it's something so crazily fabulous that someone has given me, I put them straight into the refrigerator.
Yep.
I'm not talking about just a slight chill. I mean, I'm drinking them cold, right?
Refrigerator cold.
I'll even put them, I know people hate when I say this, but I'll put ice cubes in it.
Absolutely.
Because especially when it's summer and it's hot out.
It's so hot.
I know it dilutes the wine a little bit, but I'm not talking about like a packed glass of ice, but you drop like a cube or two in there.
You have to stay hydrated.
Yes.
That's right.
Drop a couple cubes in there.
All right. So this Malbec has a little bit of structure in it so that it matches well with all the grilled foods I can think of, including grilled octopus. I mean, I would really seriously have this with any
right, Robin?
Oh, yeah.
No, I really would. I would have it with swordfish even. You know, normally I would
nice
have a very
grilled
soft
swordfish.
Red.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, here's what was fun. Go to the website if you want to find these $12 wines. If you're having people over in Europe, this is what people are drinking. They're not drinking $70 bottles of wine because people are coming over. No, this is what they're drinking. So don't feel embarrassed. Don't feel shy about bringing this to somebody's house, because we chose these because we think they're good.
You know, as consumers, if they just keep insisting that prices stay low, it sends a message to the industry to keep producing really good wines at a price point.
Agreed.
So tell your wine shop that, like, hey, I want to spend 10 or 15 bucks. Yeah.
So I want to try something. When you're at a vineyard, they are mixing grapes together. You heard us just saying some vineyards mix the Malbec grape with the Grenache grape and blah, you know, various grapes to come up with a recipe they like. Just like we add herbs and spices and then the main ingredients. These are recipes, wines are. So I want to try something. Mark, if you would pour, I put some of your rosé in the glass, and I would say that's about an inch. And I'm going to put an inch of the red Malbec in here. I'm going to give it a little shake and see what happens to both of them. And you can do this. This is fun to have people over to do this. You don't want expensive wines for this.
No, but these are perfect for it.
Perfect for it. So
I'm
let me just
blown away.
It changes the wine completely.
I am blown away. All the tannins are gone. It just softens it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was just by 50-50 and boom.
Yep.
Right?
Well, it's a fun party experiment to try.
Yeah.
To put a bunch
One of the hottest categories in the market today in the U.S. is the red blends. You can have so much fun not just doing red blends, but taking a little bit of rosé like we just did, blending it into a red. But then you think about, Alex, we've got some of the greatest wines in the world are a blend of red and white grapes, like Châteauneuf du Pape.
Which is what?
Viognier and Grenache and Syrah. So whites and reds from around southern France and blending them all together.
So I grew up thinking about Châteauneuf du Pape as being that dark, plummy, serious, thick, rich,
red wine.
And then I discovered there's a white Châteauneuf du Pape, and I think, what's that? Mm. What did they do?
Mm-hmm.
How did that happen?
It's typical in Italy or Spain that or France that they'll do 90% red, and then they'll add 10% of the white into the harvest while they're harvesting, and it's perfectly legal, and it kind of softens up a harsher vintage.
And why wouldn't you do that?
Soft it right up.
Try it. Have friends over and do this. Or just you and another, and your neighbor, you know, you and another person, just have some fun.
You know, wineries will get little beakers that you can get pretty inexpensively, I bet, online, and then you can make your own Bordeaux blend. You could get Malbec.
Oh, and measure it out so you know it's
6%, 10%. And you can make it and get some beakers.
Yeah.
It's a little nerdy, but fun.
Well, you know, you could also get a bunch of inexpensive, probably 59 cents each, shot glasses, you know, at the dollar store even, and just pour them into these shot glasses and start doing your mix. Keep track on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
I did this with my friends Elaine and Jim, and to me, they had chosen really good wines that were, I was terrified to mix them.
But, oh, sure, Faith. Please mix our expensive wine.
No, seriously.
No, please, I insist.
Out of the wine cellar.
They were doing, going to her
just,
house
like,
again.
Terrifying. So, but I would say this is the category. And, obviously, I love these wines just as they are. So you don't have to be a blender. But we were just having some fun.
And it's just a fun thing to do.
Yeah.
Totally.
I'm
fun.
In.
Absolutely.
Sign me up.
I always love to do this. Catch everybody by surprise. Fast. What are you making tonight, Chris?
I am actually going to an event, so I am not making. I'm eating out.
Oh, good for you.
I'm going to El Forno in Old Saybrook.
Ah, I love that place. Mm-hmm. Okay, go ahead, Mark.
We're going to make fried beef cutlets with fresh arugula and lemon.
Oh, you devil. Okay, Robin?
Burgers are thawing in the refrigerator right now, and we will be grilling them up tonight.
Oh, nice. Okay.
What kind of cheese?
Swiss and American for the kids.
All right.
Okay. I like Swiss because I'm fancy.
Alex, go ahead.
We're going to do wild salmon. I'm going to marinate it in soy sauce, some scallions, garlic, and then grill it over mesquite firewood. Serve it with wild
mesquite
rice.
Firewood.
Ooh. Wait, I'm the chef and I'm the only one dining out.
What are you making,
Faith?
We're getting shrimp and from the local market, which is already cooked, and we have arugula at home, and we're gonna make feta and shrimp and Kalamata olives as a salad
we're gonna make
a kind of Greek salad thing for dinner.
Are you going to serve it in bib lettuce or anything like that? like serve
no,
it in a
lettuce? But we're going to throw plates against the wall.
Go.
I love it.
Opa.
Yep, opa.
That's what you need to say.
That's how you do dinner.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I might eat this plate.
All right. I love you all madly, as I say.
We love you more.
No. All right. We're on Connecticut Public Radio, Thursdays at 3, Saturdays at noon. Weekdays, listen for my 60-second food schmoozes, and never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.
Everybody eats when they come to my.
Hey, thanks for listening to the podcast on your schedule. And when you need a little more party in your life, we're here online at foodschmooze.org. And we hope you'll talk with us on Facebook. We're at Faith Middleton Food Schmooze.